All financial advice provided on this show is for entertainment and educational purposes only. The financial ideas and strategies discussed are only provided as a starting point for a conversation about money matters. With regard to your particular investments and financial strategies, consult your financial planner, CPA, or investment professional. All your financial decisions are yours and yours alone to make and subsequently are solely your responsibility. The information that is supplied through the context of the radio program and any repurposing of its content by the host or network is a combination and collection of solid financial investment understanding, opinion, and comments. This network, show, and its host are not liable for financial strategies, outcomes that you employ in any manner that result in any kind of loss. Shares of corporate sponsors may be the subject of buy or sell recommendations in Jay Taylor's newsletter in accordance with Jay's objective opinion.
Welcome to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with your host, Jay Taylor. This hour will help investors fix issues and achieve personal gain. Now, here's your host, Jay Taylor.
Welcome to Turning Hard Times into Good Times. I am your host, Jay Taylor, and I'm speaking to you from New York City on this, the 9th day of February, 2021. I do want to thank each of you for listening to this show, making it one of the more popular shows in the Voice America Business Channel. And as always, we want to thank our sponsors for making this show economically viable. Our sponsors for today's show, Cassiar Gold Corp., SK Mining, Novo Resources, Sitka Gold Corp., El Oro Resources, Hannon Metals, Irving Resources, Fury Gold Mines, Great Bear Resources, and Lion One Metals. I've titled today's show, Extraordinary Popular Delusions and the Madness of Crowds. Kevin Duffy and Dr. Quentin Henning are my guests today. Americans are losing their First Amendment rights. That has been a key to what has made this country a free and prosperous nation. But not only have we citizens been losing our ability to think and share our thoughts with others, for decades now, the monetary markets have not been free to speak as well, because the Fed, as well as other central banks around the world, have distorted the voice of markets to efficiently price capital. Because central banks have made money appear to be inexpensive, as Austrian school economists have been warning for years, capital is being allocated inefficiently with grave consequences for the economy. Not only is capital misallocated to businesses that are not profitable, but when money can be borrowed without any cost, people spend more and save less, causing a huge imbalance. We in the United States could get away with this for many decades as long as the net exporter nations continued to buy U.S. treasuries. But those days appear to be drawing to a close, so that the Fed is now caught between a rock and a hard place. In order to fund our massive deficit, the natural market solution would be to allow interest rates to rise to the equilibrium level where the market would be cleared. But that would not only throw our economy into an immediate depression, worse than that of the 1930s, but it would also cause the U.S. deficit to rise to levels that would expose our country's bankruptcy, our state of bankruptcy, I believe causing an instant dollar collapse. It seems obvious to market observers with an open mind that the Fed has only one politically viable option, and that is to hyperinflate the dollar, which is why some of the titans of American industry are now starting to buy large amounts of Bitcoin, and some who have not been totally brainwashed are also loading up on gold and silver, both of which have proven to be time-honored money for thousands of years. I will be speaking with hedge fund manager Kevin Duffy in the second half of today's show to find out how he is dealing with these troubled realities of our day. But right now, I'm really pleased to tell you that Dr. Quentin Henning is with me to give us an update on a couple of very, very, very exciting sponsors to this show, a couple of them that I just mentioned to you a moment ago. And then Dr. Quentin Henning will be with me in the second segment of this show today to talk about another sponsor, Irving Resources. But right now, I'm really thankful that he's here to talk about a couple of the others that I'm really excited about, and I know my subscribers are very excited about. Thanks for joining me today, Dr. Henning.
Absolutely, Jay.
It's always good to hear your voice, especially when the things that you're talking about are doing so well on the exploration front. And one that I first learned to know you going back several years now is Novo Resources. And congratulations on that, because it looks like that company is heading towards production with perhaps within a few days from now. Can you give us the just give us a story of Novo Resources? Give us a quick review and where it's at with regard to its production plans.
Yeah, look, Novo is it's a instant success, 10 years in the making kind of story. So, I started the company at a very conceptual level that there's gold and conglomerates in the Pilbara region, and that they have value. Like there's a path to economic extraction. You know, fast forward 10 years. Here we are. We are on the precipice of going into production. Our mill is turning. We got our approvals. We announced that late last week. Our mill is now turning. We've got ore being stockpiled. That rock is now going through the mill. And in the next few days, maybe next couple of weeks, once the carbon charges and all circuits go, we should be able to pour gold. I mean, this is a momentous moment for the company. It'll demonstrate the viability of these conglomerates. It'll show people that not only Beaton's Creek and the Nulligan area there have this wonderful potential, but that we can now unlock the rest of the potential across the Pilbara. And we got the right team to do it. Look, we have the A-team. We have the single best team operating in Australia.
Yeah, I mean, because you are an exploration geologist, your forte is not production, but you certainly have brought on a very strong group of management team that's very, very strong. So my confidence level is very high. Maybe just real quickly, you said across the Pilbara, give our listeners an idea of the magnitude of this, because it is just absolutely enormous.
Yeah, look, we have about 13,500 square kilometers. As everyone knows, we have other projects, other conglomerate gold projects. Karratha is next on the queue. We're going to do the trial mining, trial processing later this year, or actually not too long from now. And we hope to dovetail that, effectively just bootstrap it straight into the production scenario at Beaton's. We think we can produce concentrate out of Karratha, ship it over to Beaton's. But that takes us to the other conglomerates. We got Virgin Creek, Contact Creek, and brand new ones that, Egina is a derivative of the conglomerate story. We have huge potential, and we're going to start unlocking these things one by one.
It's very, very exciting. Well, that's the one I know you best from, Novo Resources. But since I've learned to know you, you've also brought some others to my attention that you are involved with. SK Mining, a sponsor of this show. Talk real quickly about SK and what they have going for them.
Look, SK, we got our last drill assays from the 2020 season. Fantastic results. 35.5 meters of 10.6 gram gold equivalent. Unbelievable results for an early stage project. Basically, 18 out of 20 holes hit. I did a live broadcast for Crescat last Thursday. People can go to that and they can watch the video. And then I think we've done one too recently. So
yes, indeed.
It's an exciting story. We're gearing up our drill program for this year, 30,000 meters of drilling plan. We have lots of drilling to follow up on this exciting discovery. People ask about this Garibaldi acquisition, the shares in that. We bought Eric Sprott's shares in Garibaldi recently. You know what? We did that because we know the geology of this area very well. Our team recognizes that there are probably three anticlines hosting this precious metal-rich VMS mineralization. We wanted to maximize our footprint across the district, and this was the quickest, easiest path to do so. So we have basically a commanding position over the entire SK VMS district.
That's really exciting. And still another one is El Oro, involved in Bolivia. Really a very exciting silver story. Talk to us about that.
You know, they're drilling now. It is exciting. Every single day I get more and more excited. Look, the drilling is now deep. It's into the breccia pipes. And what we see is remarkable. Expect assays from the first deep hole back sometime within the next couple of weeks, easily. But the key watch there is size. This thing's going to grow and grow.
Yeah, it's absolutely huge, and it's a polymetallic deposit, I believe, isn't it? It's silver, but it has a lot of other things in it as well.
It does. It's got silver, but it's got lead, zinc, bismuth, indium, tin. Tin is increasingly valuable these days, and it also has gold. Okay, most of these systems do not have gold. We've got significant gold. Look at the tables, the assays in the last news release. You'll see what I mean. It's like an absolute smorgasbord of the periodic table.
Well, it's another very exciting story in the magnitude. I mean, you are known as, go big or go home. And that's your philosophy, and obviously you're involved with these as advisors to both of those companies because you really believe in the potential of the companies. And as I know, you also are very particular about the technical teams that you hook up with, and you need to have people that know what they're doing as well. So I'm really looking forward to that story, as well as the one we're going to talk to you about right after our commercial break. We do have to take a break now. But Irving Resources is another very fascinating story. It's unique as well. Almost everything that Dr. Henning does seems to have some uniqueness to it, that's for sure. And Irving is no exception. So we look forward, Dr. Henning, to have you back right after the break to talk about Irving Resources and what they're doing in Japan. Thank you. We will go to break, but we'll be right back.
Become our friend on Facebook. Post your thoughts about our shows and network on our timeline. Visit Facebook.com/Voice America.
Cassiar Gold Corp. trades on the OTCQB under the symbol CGLCF and on the TSX Venture Exchange under the symbol GLDC. Its flagship asset, the Cassiar Gold Project, is a large advanced stage road-accessible gold property with an NI 43-101 compliant resource estimate of 1 million ounces at 1.43 grams per ton gold at the Taurus near-surface bulk tonnage gold deposit and 15 kilometers of high-grade gold prospects. The property hosts several past-producing high-grade gold mines and is in search for the next multi-million-ounce gold camp in British Columbia.
Fury Gold Mines is a Canadian exploration and development company committed to aggressively growing its scalable, high-grade gold assets across its 3.5 million-ounce portfolio. Led by a management team of proven explorers and developers, Fury aims to generate major catalysts and performance per share by advancing exploration campaigns across Canada. Fury is well-positioned to create value for investors with low-risk development growth and the potential for a new major discovery. Fury Gold Mines trades on the TSX and NYSE American under Fury. To learn more, go to FuryGoldMines.com.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
Listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with your host, Jay Taylor. If you have a question or comment about today's show, Jay would love to hear from you at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. You can also send an email to questionsfortaylor@gmail.com. That's questions, the number 4, taylor@gmail.com. Now, back to our program.
Welcome back to Turning Hard Times to Good Times. I'm your host, Jay Taylor, and I'm really glad to tell you that Dr. Quentin Henning is back with us after that commercial break to bring us up to date with another company, another really exciting story, Irving Resources. It has its projects over in Japan, several of them at the northern end of the island, and I think they have one at the southern end of the island, but another very interesting, different sort of a story, but one. As I just said at the last segment, that Dr. Henning has a philosophy of going big or going home. And so there's probably a lot of upside, I believe, a lot of upside for investors who want to pay attention to this story. Irving trades in Toronto. IRV is a symbol. You can buy it down here in the States, as I have, under the symbol IRVRF. I counted 58.2 million shares, the last count that I've seen. Well, just looking at it's up about 25 cents today. Looking right now, it's up at $1.82 in U.S. money, so a little more than that in Canadian money. And so it's a pretty nice market cap of around $100 million, close to that right now. So thanks for coming back with me, Quentin. For the sake of those who may be hearing the Irving story for the first time, maybe just give an overview of this company's business model. It is a unique business model, has a lot of high-grade ore in somewhat narrow veins, I guess, but it has value around those veins. So give us the overview.
Correct. Look, we're chasing epithermal gold deposits. Japan is part of the Ring of Fire, And, you know, the volcanism has generated an extensive gold district throughout Japan. Hishikari is obviously the most famous mine in Japan. Produces very high grade. And what they do in Japan is really interesting. They have a lot of smelters, either base metal smelters like copper, lead, zinc, this stuff. And they need flux. Flux is one of the main components is silica. All right, the epithermal veins we're exploring for are rich in silica. Now, they also carry, of course, gold and silver. All right, so rather than processing material in a conventional way, you know, milling it and then using gravity and cyanide, for example, to extract the precious metal, in this case, what we're really talking about is being a flux operation. We're mining flux that happens to carry a lot of gold and silver, and you get paid for the gold and silver from the smelter directly. In other words, all we have to do is mine the rock, maybe crush it a bit, and produce a product that can be utilized as smelter flux. And this is a wonderful business model. It means there's no capital to build a mill. There's no need to permit onerous mill tailings and stuff like this. We can literally mine this stuff, you know, and the cost of mining and perhaps a bit of crushing and then shipping it to a smelter is really the cost that's involved. The other benefit is the silica itself has value. So the silica has a dollar value, so it's added to the value of the gold and silver. Fortunately, the smelters pay a high percentage, usually at least 90% of the value of the gold and silver in the rock. And what's remarkable is you get effectively 100% recovery in the smelting process. So, you know, basically if we mine ore, we will get paid for 90% or thereabouts of the gold silver in it, as well as the silica content. It's basically a dream.
Yeah, and there have been some very profitable operations in Japan using this business model, right? I mean, Hishikari, I think you just mentioned.
Yes.
Are there any operating right now?
Well, Hishikari is really the main gold mine operating. And, of course, they use everything for smelter flux. And, yes, they get, you know, Sumitomo Metal Mining has their own smelter, so they utilize it internally. And the cost of production is crazy. I mean, they, you know, like they're producing gold at very, very low costs, all-in costs, probably less than, you know, $500 easily. All right, but there are a few other smaller flux mines, like Mitsui, for example, has the Akashi mine, which is in Kyushu. You know, but there's demand for these. Like, there's many, many smelters, and each uses, you know, many tens of thousands to even a few hundred thousand tons a year of silica flux. You know, so there's plenty of demand. Right now, a lot of those smelters end up using just, you know, silica, like in the form of sand, you know, quartzite or something like this that doesn't have precious metal. So when they see an opportunity to get the precious metal contribution, they really jump on it. So I think there's a very high market for this stuff.
That's great. Yeah, I've seen a map and a tremendous number of smelters all around Japan. And I think what you're doing is loading it probably on boats too.
Next to the ocean. Omu is literally within 7 kilometers. Well, one of our targets is about 150 meters from the ocean. You know, so, yes, this is readily shippable.
Low-cost transport to the mills, to the smelters. Can you talk – you had some really impressive results that came out today. Can you share those with our listeners and perhaps point out the significance of them?
I sure can. Look, the what's really amazing, this Nanko target, which is part of the Omui mine site area that we drilled the latter half of last year, you know, this is the first drill pass at this target, and it's just remarkable. I mean, 8 holes, and every single hole hit multiple veins, some of which are high grade, and it shows that we have just an enormous vein system underneath, right underneath our feet. Okay, people can go to the news release, read the details. I don't want to recite everything, but you know, the point is we've discovered a large vein system. It is apparently connected to the Humpy vein system, which is about 600 meters to the northwest. You know, collectively, we have basically a bunch of near-surface veins. We're right at the tippy top of the system because we can see silica sinter preserved in places. And we have lots of room underneath us and all around us. It's open in all directions, effectively. So I think we've made a major discovery here. It's, you know, the challenge has been the drilling and the pace of operations with COVID. I'm very optimistic this year will improve, and we'll be able to hopefully start ramping things back up again to a more reasonable level. We are looking at ways to operate a second rig. It might even be sourced out of Japan, by the way, so it's a little early to speak about that, but we are looking into that. We want to kind of tackle this more aggressively. We're drilling at Omu Center now again. We got our we're going to start here shortly. We got our drill crew into Japan. The restrictions were lifted a few days ago. We've literally told them buy your airline tickets, get over there. They're in quarantine right now. They will get into site and start drilling shortly. But we want to drill our other targets aggressively. We got Hokuriya, for example, we have not tested yet. We want to drill some holes there. We got lots more to follow up at Omu Center, at Omui, which is the one I just talked about.
Mm-hmm.
And then people shouldn't forget, okay, Yamagano, a very, very important story for us. Down in Kyushu, it's the opposite end of the country.
Mm-hmm.
We have Yamagano District, okay, period. We have the historic mining lease. We did a deal with the Shimazu family, very famous family in Japan. And we also have four applications around that. That collectively cover the entire target area. So it's probably the highest value, highest quality target outside of Hishikari in Japan, and we control it.
And so where can you talk a little bit about your exploration plans this year, Quentin? Are you going to be focused primarily up there in the Omu area, or are you going to be doing some stuff down there at Yamagano?
Absolutely. So at Omu and on the targets around Omu, this would be Omui's mine site, the Omu Center and Hokuriya. We're going to have a good, robust drill program this year to follow up on all the early stage results. We're also going to start our first holes at Hokuriya later this year. So that's an ongoing thing. We're going to do follow-up CSAMT as well because these vein systems are open, so we need to see where they project out into the hinter country around us.
Uh-huh.
So lots of work planned there. Also, importantly, though, at Yamagana, we have a CSAMT program planned starting in a couple months, provided there's no further issues with lockdowns and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
We should be able to get that going. That's going to be in preparation for devising drill program for Yamagano. Bear in mind, Newmont is a big shareholder. They have backed us financially for the past couple of years. We expect that to continue. We're working very closely with them on a number of different levels. Enjoy that relationship. I used to work with the guys.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a good, strong relation that we hope to continue going forward.
And Newmont, they are equity holders of Irving,
correct.
I think?
Yes, they do share placements, and they do them, I can't remember their prescription, but it's basically a fair market value.
Mm-hmm.
At each tranche. And they've helped fund effectively our last almost 2 years of exploration.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me ask you this, Quentin, if we don't have to worry about, as you said, tailings and building a mill and all of that, it would seem as though there might be prospects for production sooner than you would normally expect with the new mining operation.
You know what? That is a definite benefit, okay? We have to drill things up, and we have to get comfort around the geology. But mm-hmm. like I said at the beginning, the business model is you save a lot of the headaches of permitting mills and doing all the background studies and engineering and so forth for that kind of work. That will be a huge benefit to this model.
Yeah, and so you're well-funded, are you, to finance through the next year, or are you going to need to raise some more money?
No, we're in pretty good shape. I think we have between $9 and $10 million Canadian right now. We're well funded for this season. Looking forward, obviously down the road, we'll need more money. But I think right now we're in very good shape.
Well, it's really looking good, and the shares obviously are responding to a certain extent with today's numbers. That's good news. So I guess that people should just be watching. When might we expect some more drill results? It's going to be a little while, I guess.
It's going to take some time. We're going into Omu Center right now, after the guys get out of quarantine, and we'll start drilling there. We'll probably drill from mid-February through mid-April. That area is low in topography. It's basically right next to the ocean. And we drill there in this season because you know the snow ground, the snow covers the ground and basically allows us to drive out to the drill pads, which happen to be on farm fields and stuff. So it actually is preferred that we work during the winter months there. But then once the snow melts, you know, we have to move shift back up to Omwe. And then, again, Hokuryo will be on the dock this year. We're going to drill up there as well. That might be with that second rig. We're looking into options right now.
Oh, good. All right. Very good. Well, thank you, Quentin. Anything else? I guess that pretty well covers it for now. We just want to keep our eyes peeled on drill results when they come out. And this is a story, you know, right now I think the shares are certainly off their highs. And not a bad time for people to start thinking about accumulation, I think. But
yeah, that's correct. Precisely right. Yeah, it's funny. Like, you know, if you look at any junior mining company, the price goes up and down every year. I mean, you know, it's significantly. I think we're at a low, but, you know, cyclicity works in our favor. So, yeah, you know, I would say, you know, we're in a good place right now.
Very good. Excellent. Well, thank you so much, Quentin. It's always great to have you on the show and hear about your exciting stories that you are very much involved with, guiding and directing. Thank you so much for being with us.
Anytime.
All right, folks, we do have to go to break now, but when we come back, Kevin Duffy is going to be with us. He is a principal of Bering Asset Management. The hedge fund has had a very good track record in the past, during bear markets at least, and he'll have some very interesting things to tell us about how he's looking at these very uncertain markets. Really weird markets that we're having these days, and Kevin will be here to provide some of his insights into how to handle these markets. So we'll be right back with Kevin Duffy after the break.
Voice America is available on your Google connected device.
Okay, Google, play Turning Hard Times into Good Times podcast on iHeartRadio.
Try it today.
Great Bear Resources, trading under GBR on the TSXV and GTBAF on the OTCQX, is a gold exploration company focused on their district-scale Dixie Project in the renowned Red Lake Mining District of Ontario. Having made multiple high-grade near-surface gold discoveries, GBR's capital efficiency has allowed them to be fully funded to complete a very active 300,000-meter drill program through 2021. Stay up to date on what's been considered one of the best-performing exploration stocks in the last 3 years by visiting greatbearresources.ca.
Voice America Business Network, the bottom line in business.
If you think you've seen online TV before, let us surprise you.
VoiceAmerica.tv is online now.
The leader in live internet talk radio has done it again. Multiple channels, a state-of-the-art viewing experience, live and on-demand programs streaming 24 hours a day. It's exactly what you want, when you want it.
VoiceAmerica.tv.
From health and wellness to business, sports, and everything in between. Discover our new world. Visit VoiceAmerica.tv now and experience the future of online television.
VoiceAmerica.tv.
Have you had a chance to check out Voice America's online magazine and blog? If you love our hosts and shows, check out articles that give an even deeper perspective, plus topics about health and fitness, movie reviews, philosophy, business tips and tactics, spirituality, positive thought, current events, and even more about your favorite host. It's just a click away at blog.voiceamerica.com. That's blog.voiceamerica.com. The Voice America Press Blog. All access, all the time.
Listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with your host, Jay Taylor. If you have a question or comment about today's show, Jay would love to hear from you at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. You can also send an email to questionsfortaylor@gmail.com. That's questions, the number 4, taylor@gmail.com. Now, back to our program.
Welcome back to Turning Hard Times to Good Times. I'm your host, Jay Taylor. Really pleased to have with me Kevin Duffy. It's been a while since Kevin's been on the show, so let me just tell you a little bit about him. He is the principal of Bering Asset Management, which he co-founded in 2002, and the firm manages the Baring Core Fund. That's a contrarian macro-themed hedge fund with a flexible mandate. He has had a great deal of success in the past with his unique approach to the markets, a very free market, Austrian school approach that he has, a belief system that he employs and uses in the market and has done so very profitably in the past. So thank you for joining me again, Kevin. It's really good to have you with me.
Yeah, hi, Jay. Thanks for having me back on.
Yeah, it's absolutely a pleasure to have you, and I'm not sure why it's been so long, but I should tell our listeners that you also publish a newsletter called The Coffee Can Portfolio. And so before we get started, where can people go to sign up for that? Because it's a very reasonably priced letter, you were telling me. What's the website where they can go to sign up for your letter?
The website is thecoffeecanportfolio.com.
Okay, easy enough. The name of the letter, thecoffeecanportfolio.com. I've titled this show The Extraordinary Popular Delusions and the Madness of Crowds, but inherent into the idea of a delusional crowd gone mad is the view that just as free speech is no longer being allowed in America, at least to the extent it once was, Americans have also been denied free speech in terms of how they speak with their decisions in the marketplace. By manipulating markets, the Fed and our government has distorted price discovery in a host of markets, but most importantly of all, in my view, is a distortion of the capital markets. As David Stockman has opined on this show, and it seems totally logical to me, is that we can't really have capitalism if the voice of savers is not permitted to be heard regarding the price of capital. So, Kevin, I'm assuming that you probably more or less agree with that statement, but do you have any thoughts about that notion that individuals are denied free speech in terms of their market selection?
Sure. I'll take a crack at it. I think that information is decentralized. I think this is the insight of Friedrich Hayek. And that, this applies to across all realms, not just the financial markets. It applies to society. And, information is also not only decentralized, but it's discovered. And it's discovered at the edges, and you need people to push the edges. So the dissenters in society are very important. Thomas Jefferson had a quote, "Dissension is the greatest form of patriotism." It applies to science, that it's always the nonconformists, it's always the people at the edges that are very important. And I think you could also apply this to the lockdowns. One of the things that the lockdowns did was it closed information. Those experiments that would have taken place at the edges never got off the ground. And then, we come to the financial markets. It's very important that markets are free, that they are allowed to transmit information. They do it through the price system, and it's a very elegant system that's all at the decentralized level. The problem takes place when you start to impose order, this natural order at the decentralized level, but when you start to impose order from the top down, that's when you start to round those edges that are important, the fringes. You start to eliminate those, and then you it's this hubris of the central planner that he knows more than the market does.
Mm-hmm. It's sort of a protective device for the people that currently hold power, I would guess. Kevin, as you were just talking, we just had Dr. Quentin Henning on the last segment, and Dr. Henning, among his geologist peers, is one of those people that are on the edges. He's on the edge. His concept of how the Witwaters Rand deposit was laid down has led him to Western Australia, where he's on the verge of discovering perhaps one of the greatest gold discoveries in a long time, in many decades. Time will tell, but it sure looks that way. So I hear what you're saying, and if we're not allowed to speak then we're sort of shut down the creative side of society. We're not allowing new ideas to emerge. And then what happens to a society? And then more direct to our point, what happens to the financial markets?
Well, it leads to all kinds of distortions. And I think, you know, it starts with probably the 800-pound gorilla in the room, the central bankers. And the problem is, you know, it's price discovery is very important. And Jeff Deist with the Mises Institute just wrote an article, and he talked about all the different characters that are involved. You know, you have entrepreneurs, you have traders, you have investors, you have speculators, you have day traders, mm-hmm. short sellers, naked short sellers, gamblers. You know, everybody is jumping in and trying to discover the right prices. And those that do the job the best profit, and those that don't go out of business. But it's always tending towards finding the right price. And the problem is when you bring in the 800-pound gorilla, they don't care about the price. They have a different agenda. They have a political agenda. And so the price discovery is all about a dedication to reality. What you see from the top down with the central bankers is a detachment from reality. So what you start to do is create distortions in the market, and it creates a perverse set of incentives. And then you see the repercussions of that. You know, you see it manifest itself in terms of, let's say, the passive bubble that we have, where you have a lot of price-insensitive buyers. All they're doing is buying the S&P 500. They don't care what the makeup of it is. They don't care what the price of the stocks are in it. You have and then it gets progressively worse. And so I think the latest example of that was what we saw with the GameStop frenzy and these sort of garbage stocks that just went crazy a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, there's some that argue that that was a very good thing, in the sense that it allowed the little investor, the retail investor, the people, mostly younger people that signed on to Robinhood and opened accounts through Robinhood. It allowed them to give the rich and the powerful their comeuppance. You know, as one who knows how to evaluate companies with value, you look at their balance sheets, at their income statements, and understand, you know, cash flows and that sort of thing. And certainly that's what some of those hedge fund guys were doing, those guys that were shorting GameStop. So what is your analysis of that whole situation? First of all, I don't know if you've looked at GameStop. I have not, but I mean, was there a reason to short GameStop? I guess that's my first question.
Yeah, that's a good question. And actually, I did look at GameStop. I follow the retail sector quite closely, and and we own a number of those stocks. But I actually passed on GameStop because it looked like a melting ice cube, and those can be decent investments, but it just looked like there were much better opportunities elsewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And so I kind of passed on it. I forgot about it. The stock was very cheap, but I just thought there were better opportunities. Anyway, you know, then I see the stock starts to go crazy. I figured the business was worth, on a good day, maybe $2 billion, maybe. Mm-hmm. And it went to a valuation of $25 billion. Mm-hmm. I mean, the stock was just absolutely through the moon. And there were some positive things going on. The founder of Chewy, he took a large position. So there were some catalysts, but mm-hmm. you know, obviously there was a lot more going on than just the fundamentals of the business.
Mm-hmm. And so the idea was that that these little guys could come in and give these guys their just desserts. I mean,
yeah, right.
Let me ask you though. There is, and I've been involved with a lot of smaller companies that seemed to me that sometimes short sellers would jump on these companies almost hoping that they could drive them out of business. And I heard reports there was something like 140% of the float was short, or I don't know if the float or the total number of shares outstanding. Is it possible that sometimes the short sellers really overdo it, and they really do deserve some just desserts?
I think that's reasonable, and it's a there's a lot of game theory involved here. You can be right, but if you're not able to stay at the poker table, you can be taken out of the game. And I think they were probably right fundamentally. They may have been right fundamentally. We'll see. Mm-hmm. But they were vulnerable, and this is a way of testing that vulnerability. So in a sense, I guess you could say that that there was a function, there was a market function, almost a stress test of the system. But I think we have to be a little cautious here, because this happened at the end of a massive bull market or a massive mania, whatever you want to call it. And so there is the short selling community has really been taken apart. I mean, there is not a whole lot left to it. And so when you get these big moves, those that are basically betting against it that are feeling all the stress, and they're being taken out of the game. So this is a way of basically flushing out what I think is probably relatively smart money from, I hate to use the term dumb money, but unsophisticated money. And that's kind of what you see at major turning points. Jay, you could also look at this at the bottom. You know, let's take, for example, 1998 and long-term capital management. Uh-huh. You know, the bets that they were making were probably, if you look back, you probably say those were proper bets. The problem is they employed too much leverage. They were vulnerable, and all it took was a downturn, and all of the relationships that they assumed worked, they broke for a time. And they were taken out right at the bottom. So, you know, you get these major inflection points, and one of the things is you get something crazy like this happening. So I also think that, you know, a lot of people are siding with the young upstarts and all the rest of it. I look at it as they're just taking this this gambling mentality. They've just taken it to a new level, and, you know, this democratization of finance, really, it's just it's the typical classic end of cycle behavior, where the retail investor is getting an invitation at the end of the party, and they're the ones that are left holding the bag. So even though they won one round at the poker table by this incredible bluff, what happened was those poker players like Melvin Capital that were wiped out, they left the table, but those chairs were replaced by somebody else, and they were much bigger players, much deeper pocketed, and the stock went down about 80 or 90% from that point.
Right. No, it sure did. I mean, it's the mass delusions, or the popular delusions, and the madness of crowds, it seems, that what has been transpiring. Not just on that side from the little guys, but I would say the market as a whole. And you and I remember very well 2000, the dot-com bubble. It just seemed to go up and up and up, and there was no stopping it, and there were always new reasons why this time it's different. You're hearing the same thing now, Kevin, and how much longer can this thing go?
It really does seem very similar to 2000. There's so many ways of looking at this. There are similarities, and of course there are always differences, right? History doesn't always repeat; it rhymes. This idea of the day trader and the retail investor, of course, that is absolutely like 2000. The idea of stocks running up, stocks that are losing money. If you look at the hottest areas this year. The three hottest themes: one is the most shorted stocks, which we just talked about. The second is the non-profitable tech stocks, and then the SPACs, the special purpose acquisition companies. So, you know, you have what do they say, Jay, that the pigs fly at the top? You know, that's the kind, you get this real garbage market at the top. You also, part and parcel with that is you get a hot IPO market. You know, we haven't seen that really since 2000. And there's a statistic that I track every week, which is the number of IPOs. It's reported in Barron's. And at the peak in 2000, that averaged about 13 a week. We're over 20 a week right now.
Wow. Oh. Yeah, well, money is flying around. It's free, right? So
it's free. And, you know, you asked about how long this can go on. It's what happens is, think of it as compulsive gambling, or think of it as the financial markets, what we talked about earlier, when you don't have the top down, the central bankers turning all the traffic lights green. It's orderly and it provides its function. But if left long enough, if distorted long enough, it basically turns into a casino. And the problem is when you start to invite novices to the casino, you get this sort of compulsive gambling effect. And so what happens is compulsive gambling is a progressive disease. And so the gambler is not content to just he's going to keep on amping up his risk level. And this is what we saw in 2000, and this is what we've been seeing this time. So for example, when the GameStop and the other stocks that were driven up by the Reddit and the Wall Street Bets crowd, when they were going crazy, they were de-risking in stocks like Apple and Amazon and Tesla. Those stocks actually went down that week. Now they've recovered because it can't get any crazier. This is something that's really important. If you go back to 2000, you saw this escalation in the craziness. So they would speculate in the dot-coms. You saw it also in 2006 and 2007 with the subprime bubble. You know, this was the worst of the worst mortgages that were being taken on and the money being lent. This happened in late 2006, and then that bubble burst in early 2007. So I think what we probably ought to – that's something that we should look for. Definitely that's a sign when you see this progressive nature and you see this parabolic frenzy going on. And then what we should look for – and also you see it with margin debt. Margin debt has been spiking. It's at record levels, almost $800 billion. And so what we should look for, I think, the next phase of this is – that the most marginal area will crack. Now, we certainly got that with the GameStop type of stocks, but you should see a crack in the most marginal areas, and also look for people to dismiss those warning cracks as isolated and contained. This is exactly what happened in 2000, and it's exactly what happened in 2007.
Mm-hmm. Sure. I remember... our Federal Reserve chairman telling us it's isolated, these problems with the real estate market, for sure. Right. But again, I'm thinking, this is the masses of kids that were piling into this to buy GameStop. They weren't looking at the intrinsic value or lack thereof of this company. They were just simply jumping in. It's like a herd mentality, isn't it? It's like it's just like a massive assault. It's mindless, I think.
Yeah, it's crowd behavior at its worst, and I think that's another sign. It's another element that you see at the end of a mania. I mean, a mania is a madness, and it's a collective delusion. It's the madness of crowds,
Yeah,
so
exactly.
That's what it is.
Mm-hmm. Well, it reminds me a little bit of some of the stuff that was happening in the summer in the streets as well, but... I don't know if there's any parallel to that or not, but it's a lot of craziness going on in a lot of areas of our lives, that's for sure. Well, I'd like to get to sort of the more practical side of of what you do in your search to help your subscribers. You talked to me about something called an acronym called MOAT. Can you tell us what MOAT is and how you apply that in your letter?
Sure. MOAT is, I came up with this acronym. MOAT stands for margin of safety. So looking for businesses with a sustainable competitive advantage with a moat, so to speak, but also a valuation that affords you a margin of safety and a balance sheet that affords you that margin of safety. The O is for owner-operators, so we're really looking for companies with skin in the game. The A is for away from the crowd. We try to avoid the crowd at all costs. And then T is for trends. Try to make sure we have as many trends, whether they be positive trends or negative trends, on our side. And that really is all about the stock selection.
And then you so you apply this to your stock picking. And I guess in your newsletter, do you actually get into specific recommendations?
Yes. What I've done is I track a model portfolio. I did that since day one. And so right now there are 27 equity participations. And what I do is I break down the portfolio into compartments. One is the coffee can. These are, and thus the name, the idea that you can find a very good business and that you want to basically put it in the coffee can and forget about it. Of course, mm-hmm. We can't totally forget about it. We still have to monitor the situation. The mm-hmm. The second category is opportunistic, and then speculations. The speculations tend to be very small. And then we have a section for reserves. I think it's very important to hold some reserves because I think every decade or so you get a great buying opportunity, but you're not going to be able to take advantage of it unless you have reserves. This is certainly a time for safety and a time where we want to have those reserves. And we don't just hold cash, Jay. We'll also hold precious metals. We see that as a surrogate for reserves. And then finally, we have a section for portfolio insurance.
Okay, and that might have to do with gold and silver and that sort of thing. Gold, anyway.
I count that as it's a good point. Gold is definitely a more defensive area. Mm-hmm. But I include that into the opportunistic and the coffee can section.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, it sounds like a lot of pretty practical stuff that you provide in your letter, and you always have a certain theme each. I guess you publish every other month, is it, Kevin?
Every 2 months, correct.
Every 2 months, okay. And your next letter will come out when?
I'm hoping to come out in a couple of weeks.
In a couple of weeks. Well, I'm going to start paying a lot of attention to what you're doing. I think you're on the right track in many ways, and I know that you and I have similar philosophies about free market economics. We're both Austrian school thinkers and believe that people should be free and their voices should be heard, both in every realm of our society. At least that's, I think, what our founding fathers believed. And free market economics has worked very, very well when it's allowed to exist, unfortunately. To a great extent, it's not. It's being stifled these days. But we will keep doing the best we can. And I thank you very much, Kevin, for spending the time with us today. And again, it's the coffee can. It's the coffeecanportfolio.com is where people should go, right, to sign
that's,
up for
that's
your letter.
That's correct. Yes.
Excellent. All right. Well, that is all the time we have. Thank you so much for being with us, Kevin. And that's it for this week, folks. Next week, Michael Oliver will be with me, Michael Timmons of Fury Gold Mines, and I'm not sure who's going to be my main guest. There's still a couple of possibilities. So until then, goodbye and God's blessings to you.
Thank you again for listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with Jay Taylor. Please join us again next Tuesday at noon Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel.
Novo Resources Corp trades on the OTCQX under the symbol NSRPF and on the TSX Venture Exchange under the symbol NVO. Its flagship assets are located in the Pilbara region of Western Australia. Novo has recently partnered with Sumitomo Corporation of Japan to evaluate, advance, and develop the company's Australian gold projects. With over $40 million in cash and $60 million committed from Sumitomo, Novo is well on its way to establishing itself as one of the top junior explorers and developers in Australia.